you very much, Alex, and good evening, everybody. It's great to join you. I haven't seen or talked to any of you in a while, and this is a great opportunity to share, and hopefully we have some interesting things to tell you. K3THS, how's the audio over?
Exciting, you're awesome. Go ahead, it's WCKAC.
All right, thank you very much. So tonight, I'm going to try to take only about 10 minutes or so and give you the highlights. There is a PDF on the website. You can get more. And I gave you plenty of additional web links. You can get additional information on this. But we want to talk about actually amateur radio opportunities within the Federal Emergency Communications areas, and in particular, the Department of Defense MARS program, the Air Force Auxiliary Civil Air Patrol communication program, and then finally how that relates with the DHS SEERS program. There's also the Coast Guard Auxiliary, which also has communications opportunities if you're interested. And disclosure here, tonight I'm here as a fellow amateur radio operator. My remarks reflect my thoughts and comments, and should not be a official reflection or comment from the Department of Defense, simply the Army and the Air Force, nor the Department of Homeland Security. So, as I talk about emergency communications, as amateur radio operators, we all pretty much have some enthusiasm and passion for public service, besides the technical aspects of amateur radio, the science. A lot of us get involved because of the public service connection, volunteer service, emergency services, and this is important for particularly the state and local areas with emergency communications. You have the ARIES program, RACES, the ACS program. Those are all state and local emergency communications programs, and those are critical programs to support our communities. We are fond in the emergency management world of saying, every emergency is local. Every emergency starts local. Every emergency ends local. So supporting the local environment is critical. However, in the federal emergency communications pieces, the federal side is used to being the one that can bring some additional resources to the state and local environment. Bar national crisis, like we're in right now with the pandemic, most of the federal support is based at regional and state support for major incidents or emergencies, whether it's a terrorist event or whether that's a natural disaster like a hurricane. And there's opportunities for you as an amateur radio operator to actively participate in supporting those activities as well as passively participate in those activities. And that's kind of what I want to hit on as we go through talking about some of these organizations. So the first one first of all, let me give you a little bit of background perspective on HF communications, and particularly in the realm of emergency communications. Ever since 9/11, the federal community especially has been actively working to try to improve interoperable communications. I think that anybody that's been involved in communications and in emergencies, what is the first problem we all agree on? That communications is usually not where we want it to be. People can't talk to each other regardless of the multitude of million-dollar pieces of equipment we have or not. So since 9/11, the federal government's been very active in trying to build a better interoperability community. I'll leave it up to you to decide if we're getting there or having any progress. Certainly, things like FirstNet and some of the other software-defined solutions that are coming online are very helpful in the emergency communications realm. But the other aspect that has happened, particularly in the last 10 years, in the federal and the military side, is a resurgence in HF communications. So in HF communications, what we're looking for ultimately is the long-haul capability to move information from point A to point B. And information is critical in the management of any kind of emergency, whether that's at a local level or at a national or global level. And we have relied, particularly over the last 40 plus years now, and moving away from traditional RF type radio communication to the big boys, the satellite communication, the cellular communication, and now even cyber-based internet communications. The problem with that, that has come to light, especially over the last 10 years, is the adversaries build up technology and capabilities to impact on that. So operating in a cyber-denied or impaired environment, concerns with critical infrastructure, grid-down situations, the aging of our critical infrastructure, and we certainly have seen that in the last few years after some of these major hurricanes, Irma, Maria, Sandy, Katrina, all of those things had devastating impacts on our critical infrastructure, particularly in metropolitan areas that are weak with their communications, transportation, power. All of those things are critical parts for us to maintain, first of all, our own national security, as well as the needs at a local level to provide not just the information, but the movement of critical resources, such as food, water, shelter, medical supplies. So I think we all can agree that communications is a big piece to all of that, and if we do not take care of it or have redundant capability, we're not able to meet all of the emergency functions that we need to do. And HF communications in particular has had a rebirth in that, because HF communications can be some of the most stable communication platforms that we have. Everything from the sun, internal mass injections, to man-made worst-case scenarios, nuclear detonation, can wreak havoc on our communications and power capability. But if you have a well-maintained HF system, that has a capability of getting that long-haul communications or communications at a regional level, going 300 to 800 miles out, your NCIS-type communications capability. And certainly, UHF has plenty of room to play here, too, but that's closer in at a local level. So a lot of what has happened in the last 2 years in the military and the federal government is a resurgence. So the one thing that technology and communication to include the radio doesn't stop is people that talk too long, right? All right, so moving on, the first organization I'd like to bring up to your attention is the MARS program. MARS stands for the Military Auxiliary Radio System, and it actually dates back to 1925. We're almost 95 years old at this point. We're soon to be 100 years old. And it ties in and parallels the development of amateur radio and the creation of AARL along the way. Many of the same people were involved in that. But the country relied on the Army in the early days and the Army amateur radio system to provide qualified radio communicators. They had significant plans in preparation for communicators for World War II. They served in the 30s during the Great Depression, providing HF communications at the labor camps that were set up to support building some of the infrastructure, and HF radio was their use of a telephone, if you will, to send health and welfare messaging home. The Army was instrumental in developing some of the early-day HF radio communications, particularly starting out with experiments and testing out in the Yukon, in Alaska, in the Northwest, trying to develop communications outside of the telegraph and flag signals and those kinds of things. The Navy soon picked up on it, and the Navy was one of the first to implement HF radio communications across the fleet. Interestingly, our modern-day Navy was one of the first ones to move away from HF communication, relying on SATCOM communications. Of course, they realized that is no longer a viable solution. HF communications is a very critical need. And in today's software-defined radio community and computer connections, HF radio in that network is a very complex system. Things that they get involved with in HF now include ALE and phone patches and connections into our cell networks, our SATCOM networks, into the cyber world as well, which, of course, brings its own vulnerabilities when we do talk about cyber denied and impaired environments. But the Army was very instrumental in developing some of the early day HF communications, and you can see some of that history and some of that information at the links in the document I gave you. The mission of Army Mars, or the Mars program as a whole, and the Army is the executive agent, but the Air Force also has volunteers within this program. The Navy discontinued their amateur program a couple years ago. But the purpose of the program is to provide support to the global high-frequency enterprise radio network that DoD maintains, and to provide humanitarian assistance and disaster relief and temporary disaster communications for federal, state, and local civil authorities as part of defense support to civil authorities. Many of you, particularly if you were in the military, may remember Mars because Mars was responsible for what was called the Mars Grant. It was a typical morale welfare welfare message that was sent in the phone patches going home. There is still some support for that activity, but Mars is an extremely smaller service than it used to be even just a couple of years ago. A lot of that has to do with the integration of the computer and the digital side of the house, the cyber capability you must have that is internet disconnected to be able to run the digital software, the encryption software. And those are some of the reasons for being involved in a system like this. Not only do you get additional frequencies to work on, the military and federal frequencies, but you get the technology that includes the digital capabilities that they're using and the encryption. As an amateur radio operator, you are not able to do encryption on the radio, and that is a very critical skill level for a Mars operator. Mars operators are probably some of the most highly trained HF operators in today's world, and that is also one of the reasons why there's so few now, because of it requires a little bit of time, effort, and work to stay up to date on these activities. So if you're interested in Army Mars, we're certainly happy to give you more information on that. You can follow the links I gave you, but in short, what does it take to be an Army Mars operator? First of all, you must be a licensed amateur radio operator. The Army requires you to maintain your general amateur radio license. The Air Force will allow you to come on board with your technician license. You must be 18 years of age. You must be a U.S. citizen or a limited permanent resident. And you must go through a background check. You cannot have any felony convictions, and you must complete a basic training session that takes roughly 6 months for most people to complete. During that basic training session, you'll learn how to run a net, net control station. You'll learn how to use all the digital software. You'll learn how to use all the encryption software. And you'll learn more about NGIS communications and propagation than you probably would ever want to know. You only need to provide your time and effort in your rig. Your rig must be spec'd for the HF bands that the military operates on. It must be at least 100 watts. And you must have an antenna system that allows you to communicate in an NGIS configuration. So that's, you know, roughly 300 to 600 miles out to 800 miles max out is what the requirement is. You don't have to have a superstation. You don't need to have a tower. You don't need to have an amplifier or 1,500 watts or anything like that. And then you do have to go through training and maintain that through exercises. We do 4 national exercises. There are daily nets involved every day, 365 days a year. You're involved at state, regional levels. There's national nets, the global nets, and the big boys get to play with the aircraft. There's a lot of phone pass capabilities, particularly on the Air Force side of the house. They propagated And we're a resource to the Air Force and air crews around the world to allow them to conduct phone patch operations with their operating bases or administrative pieces, as well as a backup for emergency communication. Some of the big things that Army MARS has been involved with, particularly recently, is hurricane support and propagating information at a local level and moving it up through the Department of Defense. Army MARS is under the Army NETCOM command, and our primary support agencies are actually in the backyard of Maryland. So we take this information that we get during exercises or during real-world activities, and we pass it up the chain of command, and they plot that out in various crisis management teams as they plug in. And particularly, one of the things that we look at doing is aggregating what we call community status reports, which is information on the local infrastructure, transportation, power, communications, medical, that kind of information going on, and we get that information from folks like us, the amateur radio operators, local news, local environment, as we report those pieces of information up. We'll talk about how you can participate in this passively without being a member of MARS during our emergency communications exercises, as we talk about DHS shares in the interoperability community. So we'll switch over now and talk about the Silver Air Patrol a little bit.
KV3B, repeater.
A lot of folks may not think about Silver Air Patrol as being a communications element. Certainly, their key function here is aviation, promoting an education of education and cyber, STEMS programs and cadet leadership programs. Mike Flowery, KA3IXO, is also a local member of the Silver Air Patrol and a communications officer for the senior squadron over at the Montgomery Air Park. But communications is a critical function within COC, both at a national level as well as local levels. This is an opportunity for you to get out of your shack. Our emergency services program provides search and rescue services around the country. We have the largest single engine air fleet in the world, civilian air fleet. We are directly supporting Department of Defense Homeland Security missions, as well as State of Maryland Homeland Security missions, like Bay Patrol, and search and rescue activities. We've seen the local news recently with the loss of some of the Kennedy family member, and there was a large search and rescue activity along the bay. Well, those activities are worked out of mission bases. Those mission bases must have communicators. So there's plenty of room for communications folks there. And within the COP, you don't have to be an amateur radio operator to participate in communications. In COP, we have several levels of communicators, starting with the basic radio operator. We call them a mission radio operator right now, but COP is going to the ICS nomenclature and mission or the functional skill set that FEMA uses in ICS. So the mission our radio operator would be a RADO, a radio operator, and then our communication unit leader will become the CONELs, the communications leaders that you may be familiar with from the ICS system. But they work in mission bases, they work at the state emergency emergency operations center, county emergency operations centers, and they can be mobile. They can work from aircraft, running airborne repeater systems and those kinds of things. So I'll give you a quick lowdown of some of the radio equipment and activities that CAP has, which includes thousands of radios. Our repeater network spans the country, and it's well over 600, right at 600 Motorola Quantar repeaters that are spread out across the country. Our primary radio platform at the moment is the E.F. Johnson handheld and mobile radios, but we are going to the Motorola 4,000 and 4,500 radios as the E.F. Johnsons have met their life cycle. The VHF units that we have are P25 digital capable radios, and we also have UHF 700 and 800 radios now for interoperability. And then on the HF side of the house, we use the MICOM 2 and 3 HF ALE radios. Now, MICOM has also reached its end of life, and CAT is currently specing a new HF platform, but we have roughly 1,500, 1,700 HF units spread out across the country, both mobile and fixed. ALE, automatic link establishment, is used in a lot of our communications. That's pretty standard for military communications. We operate on Air Force spectrum. And right now, they are looking at whether they go to a new HF platform, which can be a CODIN or maybe the Barrett system. Barrett has partnered, or MICOM has partnered with Barrett radios, and they do make the software-defined 4050, which we use within our work environment. Our network is the Barrett 4050, and it's a very nice software-defined radio with analog and digital encryption, ALE capability, remote operation capability, of course, and connect all the way up to secure communication, Type 1 communications, which is your national security classifications, your classified information kind of stuff. Very nice radio system. CODIN has similar models as well as Harris. One of the cool things, because my family is involved in this, CAT is something that your whole family can get involved with. And aviation has always been a hobby or an interest of mine. Is you can be an air crew member and participate in your communications and activities. We do have what we call hybrid aircraft, and those are aircraft where we actually fly an airborne repeater system in support of various search and rescue missions, as well as expanding communications and aerial imaging. We're doing a lot of aerial imaging for FEMA now. We did a lot of critical infrastructure mapping. Pretty much all of the island of Puerto Rico we did after the hurricanes recently, mapped their critical infrastructure. And there's a large drone program now as well. We have the largest civilian drone program in the world as well, which is used for search and rescue and aerial imaging and infrastructure mapping as well. So what does it take to be in the Silver Air Patrol? Again, it's about time and effort. Silver Air Patrol does require a membership fee. It's very nominal, all things considered. Montgomery County has three squadrons. There's an adult squadron at the air park, which has the aircraft. And then Bethesda, Chevy Chase, and Upper Montgomery are what we call composite squadrons that have both cadets and adults. You must be 18. Again, you must be a U.S. citizen or a resident permanent alien. You do have to go through a background check. And with the Silver Air Patrol, you will have to be fingerprinted because of the child protection laws. You'll have an FBI fingerprint check done. Within a lot of squadrons, they'll do the fingerprint taking for you. Our squadron meets at the public safety building in Gaithersburg, and a lot of our members are part of the Montgomery County Police Department, so we are able to do our own fingerprinting for that. Again, time, hours, you know, it's going to be up to you on how many hours you participate. Unlike Mars, CAP does not have a required number of hours to participate, but there are things along the advancement line as you move through the ranks or as you move through your mission functional skill set you'll have to commit to. The one thing I didn't mention in the Army Mars, which I should mention, is there is a time requirement. You must put in 72 hours over the course of the year, and that includes one national communications exercise a year. But I will tell you, my Mars operation, that 72 hours breaks down to probably 6 hours a month. I generally put closer to 15 hours minimum in every month. And you've got to do that to maintain your skill set. A lot of skills that you'll learn are perishable if you don't practice it. I think, Dave, you're on as well. Dave, hi. And Dave, I'm blanking on ADE. I'm blanking on your call sign. But Dave's also a member of Army Mars here in Maryland.
John, this is Dave at 380E. I've switched my focus to actually Coast Guard Auxiliary, and there's an Oxfam program within that, so I've switched focus to that. We're developing an Oxfam program here in this area through the 5th Southern region, so that's part of what I'm working on now, as well as TCO qualification for Coast Guard Auxiliary. Sorry to disappoint you, but I've moved away from Mars and toward that N380.
No, actually, very good. I'm glad you mentioned that. Let me go through the last part here, which will be the DHS shares piece, and maybe you can share a little bit more details on the auxiliary piece, because I'm not familiar with the communications program other than they have that, and that is a capability, and again, would speak to the federal emergency communications activities you could get involved in. Over.
KV3B, repeater.
So the last thing let me cover, and we'll turn it over to Q&A. I do want to share a little bit about the DHS SHARES program. SHARES stands for the Shared Resources High Frequency Radio Program. It is actually run nationally by another MARC member and a long-term, highly esteemed member of MARC. Ross Merlin, many of you may know him, Whiskey Alpha 2, Whiskey Delta Tango. And the SHARES program, which now comes under CISA, which is the Cyber Infrastructure Security Agency, and their Cyber Security Division, is a bit of a holdover from the Cold War days, where HF communication was very important. And because of our lessons learned during the Cold War days, has helped make this resurgence within the HF community. But SHARES was designed to be an interagency emergency message handling system for transmission specifically of national security and emergency preparedness type information between federal entities and their affiliates, which can mean the agency, it can mean state and local EOCs, and it also includes NGOs like the American Red Cross is a big member of the DHS SHARES program. MARS, CAP, the Coast Guard Auxiliary, we're all part of the DHS SHARES program, as well as every federal agency within the government has a SHARES connection at some point for continuity of government and continuity of operations. So the conditions on being able to use SHARES, particularly for an affiliate station, like an EOC, state and county level EOCs, is that they must primarily have lost their primary mode of communication, and they must have some kind of need to interface with the federal government. And that's where SHARES comes in. So if you're not in the federal government, you're not affiliated with those, you can directly apply to be a SHARES station with ROS, and they're always looking for folks that can support their net control station capabilities. An area where we want you to have capability with M110 or MT63, be able to operate with HF ALE, those kinds of things. Generally, I think Ross would be looking for a more high-end, experienced radio operator with somebody that's got the right kind of equipment. DHS SHARES did participate quite a bit in support of some of the post-hurricane operations, particularly in Puerto Rico as well. But the big thing for us is they have coordinated an interoperability capability. And that interoperability capability is 60 meters. So on 60 meters, an amateur radio operator can communicate with federal and military stations as part of this larger HF interoperability. And commercially, military stations include Mars, CAP, Coast Guard, those folks that may be involved in an exercise or a tasking can reach out to the amateur radio community by using the 60-meter band. So when we have these national communications exercises, a lot of times we try to get that information out to the larger amateur community, and if you can tune into the 60-meter band, then we can actually communicate back and forth, share some of this information that we use for the county status reports and other activities going on. So I hit, I think, on all the highlights I have, and Dave, since you're on, and we did put a link in for the Coast Guard, if you would like to give us a few minutes on what the communications pieces are there, and we can certainly open it up for the rest of the time for Q&A, or turn it back over to Alex. It's 203 Delta Hotel Sierra. Over.
203 Delta Hotel Sierra and 388. Thank you. Great presentation. Very, very informative. As far as what we're doing in auxiliary right now, in this area, as I mentioned before, we're creating an amateur group for those members already in the auxiliary. Anyone is welcome to join. There's no age restriction beyond a certain point. As long as you can perform your duties, you're welcome. And we are going to be involved in the shared program eventually. But the goal for the CAM operators eventually is to get the Marine HF and Marine VHF call time under their TCO, their telecommunication qualification, so we can support any and all activities in the auxiliary, which is basically our mission is to support recreational boating safety and support anything that the Coast Guard asks us to do.
All right, awesome. Thanks, Dave. We appreciate you sharing with that. I'll open it up for any questions, and we'll go from there. K3GS. Over. Last station, you were cut off there. Over.
M3SR, how about you? Over.
Hey, go ahead. We've got you. Over.
Okay, thanks very much. I just wanted to reiterate your comment regarding the shares interoperability. The most important thing that they bring to the table with the non-governmental organizations is the power company and the telecommunication company that participate in that program. And having been a past active participant as my role as communications officer of the state, there are many years where both people came to the table, and I think there's still some that have dropped down and no longer participate. I can't speak to that as much as I did in the past. Thank you, Sean, and 3DSR.
Yeah, Roger, an excellent point, Hank. In today's world, the collaboration and coordination between non-government entities, particularly utilities and the critical infrastructure communities, you know, power, water, gas, telecommunications, those are really critical pieces, and they're all involved at the table, of course, DHS and the CISA, as the Cyber Infrastructure Security Agency, does a lot of that coordination now, and shares is a good tool and a good example of that long-term collaboration and coordination with those communities. Additional questions, over.
M4DR.
M4DR. Go ahead. Over.
Roger. I was listening to your presentation with great interest. You mentioned 60 meters. The availability of amateurs, is that restricted to the five channels that we've been given, or do we need to have capability to cover more channels than that in order to interface? Over.
Excellent question. It is limited to the five channels on 60 meters for an amateur radio operator. So the military and federal entities would come to those specific channels to reach the amateur radio community. And conversely, if you know something's going on, you could go to those channels, announce yourself, and if there are stations looking for information or trying to make connections, they'll come up on that. But for amateur radio operators, yes, we are confined to
whatever our band plans allow us to do under FCC. Over.
Oh, thank you. This is N4DR, Chris.
Juliet Foxtrot, Enter.
Juliet Foxtrot, Echo. Go ahead, over.
Hey, John, this is Tony, CC3JFE. Just wondering, so you have these different programs. How does one determine which program to join? Over.
Well, the first question you might want to ask is of your significant other, wife, spouse, your family members. And then two, what kind of time do you have? As noted, I belong to both Mars and CAP, but I am also kind of in a unique position because my work allows me to cross-pollinate in those areas because of work requirements. So the bottom line is you have to decide what time you have available and what do you want to do. So Mars is pretty much you get to stay at home in your shack. CAP is very much a hands-on activity. You would be out and about. Dave could give you more on the Coast Guard, but it's out and about, if you will, type of activity. And don't forget, you've got Aries, you've got our own ACS, you've got local emergency communications opportunities as well to get involved with. For me, because of my military background and work background, I love this opportunity because it allows me to work in a very organized, disciplined area. There is a lot of policy procedure already promulgated. It's still a volunteer community, but it's run by the Air Force. It's run by the Army. It's run by the government kind of pieces. So you don't get some of the typical problems you have with other volunteer activities at a local level. Over.
Well, thank you very much. Let's speak to some information. Your presentation so far is interesting.
All right, we'll put it out there one more time if there's any other comments or questions, anybody else would like to share some of their experiences. Otherwise, we'll turn it over to Alex. A3GX, over.
This is Alpha Bravo T-Zulu, DJ. I have some question on the, you mentioned in the program the Civil Air Patrol. Where in the county, the website to look for information about their activities? Just wondering. Back to you, this is AB3BZ.
AB3BZ, big question. First of all, I would direct you to the PDF document on the MARC website. If you scroll to the second page, I've got a lot of hot links already entered in there for Army Mars, the Air Force, Mars Program, Civil Air Patrol, Coast Guard. But if you go to GoSilverAirPatrol.com, their website will tell you everything there is about the Civil Air Patrol and will have an opportunity to get to the local links to get to the local squadron information. And certainly, you guys, if you're welcome to reach out to me. My email is simple. It's k3dhs@arl.net. That website again is www.gocivilairpatrol.com. Over.
This is ABTVZ. Thanks for the info, and I'm looking to that. With that, back to the next control. Back to you and to the next control. This is ABTVZ.
All right, very good. Thank you, everybody, for allowing me to share and participate a little bit there. We went a lot longer than I thought we would. But again, we'll be here. If there's questions, we'll hang around after the net if there's any additional thoughts or communications. But otherwise, Alex, we'll turn that back over to you. K3DHS, over.
K3DHS, this is W3JAG. Thanks, Sean, for a really terrific presentation. You know, amateur radio operators, we like to get involved. We like to help the community. So when you give us more opportunities to tell us about more places we can help in, especially in federal emergency communications, which is what we're all about, that is a fabulous thing and lots of great information. So thanks again, Sean, for doing this.